Hey, this is Todd Stacy, and welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. I'm joined by my friend and political consultant, David Mowry. Thanks for coming on, Dave.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Nice to be here. I like the studio. You guys should see this place.
What Dave means is my very high-tech living room. It's a little bit more soundproof or acoustically sound than my empty office at this point.
So. You could have steered into that joke and like people would have thought there was a studio, you know. I'm just saying.
Well, the cool thing about having a podcast like this is you basically get to record everywhere.
That's right.
And, you know, we'll get to this, but I interviewed all these Senate candidates on Friday and, you go to them. You go where we are. Tuberville and I were in a coffee shop. It was loud as the devil. And so we ended up just finding this little corner. But I'm really glad to get the podcast started back. Everybody's been asking me, hey, man, when are you going to do this? When is In the Weeds coming back? And honestly, I would have loved to have done it sooner because it's cool to put together. It's cool to have all these guests. But with all that has been going on, we're trying to grow the business, get our news service ready for the session. We just hadn't had time.
Yeah.
But here we are.
It's time intensive. It's 8:30 on Sunday night, and it's the only time that the two of us can get together to do this. You know, it's one of those things that, what people think is they think that you just turn the mics on and then we talk and then that's it. You know, they don't see the thought that goes into what the episode is, getting the guests, getting hooked up with the guests, and then all the editing and stuff. I mean, it's a whole nother, you know, you could have somebody that was just a podcast producer on the staff of AL Daily News to, you know what I mean? Like, you have room for that and then it would come out more is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's not get ahead of
ourselves. So, you know, you guys find some more paying customers and maybe we'll do that, you know?
But we're back. We're back. And so just to give you a little idea of what to expect this week, like I said, I interviewed all three of the top Senate candidates based on the polling that we did, Jeff Sessions, Tommy Tuberville, and Bradley Byrne. So those interviews are done. We're going to get the podcast out. We're going to put them all up on podcast, have all of their transcripts of their interviews out this week. Today is Jeff Sessions. I guess you could say he's leading in the race, depending on what poll.
Yeah, within the margin, right?
Sure. And so we'll play that here in a minute. But and tomorrow will be probably Tommy Tuberville, and right after that will be Bradley Byrne. So expect three podcasts this week, as well as three stories on the Daily News, just explaining what the...
Sort of them making their closing argument?
A little bit
about the process of running for Senate, that type of thing? Or
so, you know, it's different what we do compared to maybe more mainstream sites. Our audience is advanced placement, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the political nerds like me. And so you sort of get to... cater to a smarter crowd, a more informed crowd. So, yeah, I mean, look, I want the questions answered. I want to talk about the issues, but also want to get to, you know, what makes these candidates, what their campaigns are like, what actually they want to do, what kind of senator they want to be. And so we'll get to that. But, you know, one of the reasons I thought it was great that you could do this, because you are a political consultant, have worked on many, many, many campaigns and different roles, manager, consultant, what have you. But you're not actually signed on to any of these campaigns.
Right.
So we can trust what you say. you're not.
Yeah, I'm not showing for anybody. Yeah, I'm kind of here as a neutral observer, as somebody who knows the process but isn't getting paid to advocate, you know, for any of these people.
Well, what would you say is kind of the state of the race here in the...
I saw your polling, and then I think there was something that came out the Club for Growth one came out sort of concurrently. And I mean, I think it wasn't, that's why I said within the margin, because I think they had, did they have Tuberville up two,
mm-hmm.
and you had Sessions up one or two? Is that, I'm going by memory here, but
yeah, Daily News, Mason Dixon had Sessions at 31, Tuberville at 29.
And then
Bradley at
Club had that exactly reversed, right?
Well, and they had two, and in their latest one, they had Tuberville leading at 32,
I think, okay,
and then Tuberville at 29. Sessions had, Tuberville at 32, Sessions at 29, Byrne had been consistently at that 17 mark.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And so then you got to figure who do the, you know, everybody wants to say who do the undecideds break to. And that's, you know, sort of the, what is the, that's the $5 million question or whatever. My thing is that, you know, probably somebody is going to be sitting there next Wednesday with like $1 million in the bank, kind of mad at themselves that they didn't spend it down to get into the runoff. And I don't know who that somebody is going to be. If, you know, just from what's available from spending reports and stuff like that, I don't see like a groundswell for anybody. I don't see anybody that has like I haven't seen like huge momentum shifts. I haven't seen, even among my friends or whatever, you know, nobody's even, usually this is about the time when people start calling me and saying, all right, who am I voting for, you know, or who are you for? Or like my dad will call me and ask me who I'm working for or whatever. And I just haven't really gotten much of that. It does seem to me that maybe people are holding their powder, kind of seeing this, like before they double down on who they're going to be with or whatever, they're waiting to see who gets into the runoff and what those dynamics are. One thing that people should look out for is that this year's runoff is in 3 weeks. It's at March 31st, which is insane.
Yeah.
So if you know, you can do kind of the opposite of what I said, and you can spend down to get into the runoff. But if you wake up on March 4th and you're broke, then you're basically screwed.
Yeah, and that's got to be a careful balance, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If I hold nothing back, there's no time with that shortened window. It was 6 weeks, went to 4 weeks. The legislature passed that just last year. So up until now, it's been 6 weeks. You have no window to fundraise.
Right.
Maybe very quickly, but you got to be really organized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no time to fundraise. So, okay, I want to spend just as much as I need to get into the runoff, to guarantee I get in the runoff. But if I don't have that $1 million,
mm-hmm,
I'm dead in the runoff, and yet if I spend it before I need it,
Yeah, it is a delicate balance, and of course now there's some money that's earmarked just for the runoff.
Yeah.
And you know, if people are smart, which I know that they are, instead of having people that can max or people that go over their limit for the primary, you know, write a check that says general on the four line. Hopefully they've been getting them to write it for the runoff early, because you got time to raise general money, and general money is going to come. Whoever emerges from the process on what would be, I guess, April Fool's Day, is going to be well funded against Doug Jones. I don't think you got to worry about that. So you got to worry about getting through this week. We got tomorrow, or when this comes out, it'll be Monday. That gives you 8 days, and you really, you know, you got 8 days to kind of let it all on the line. I think they're all kind of attacking each other. Is that right on TV?
Oh yeah. And just to go back and unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
If any of you don't know, so federal campaigns are a lot different than state campaigns in that you have a limit. It's $2,700 a pop.
I think, isn't it up to, it's up to $2,800.
Yeah, you're right. $2,800 a pop. Of course, for a couple, that really means $5,600. Mm-hmm. So $5,600. But that is calculated per election.
Yep.
So, okay, if I'm a big donor, I can give Jeff Sessions, you know, $5,600 for the primary, but also $5,600 for the primary runoff,
mm-hmm,
and then another $5,600 for the general.
Mm-hmm.
So, but all, you know, when they're raising all these funds and doing all this, You have to
allocate it. It has to be specifically, once you go over that $2,800 mark, it has to specifically say, like, the next $1 has to say, like, what it's for. And you cannot automatically assume that money allocated to the general is allocated for a runoff, I don't believe. Now, there may be an opinion. The last time, it's been a long time since I've been involved in a federal race where there would have been a runoff. But I know that, what you can do is let's just say, you know, old Moneybags Todd over here, you know, writes you a $5,600 check, and you get into a runoff situation, you can send him a letter, and if he signs it and resends it back to you, and it says, like, hey, I'm you can use this money for, you know, unencumbered, you can use it for the runoff, then you're allowed to do that without having to actually re-exchange the money. And, you know, the federal folks are pretty serious about it. I mean, not that we're not in state, but forever, you know, Todd and I are old now. So we remember when money rules were so much more lax in this state. But the feds have always been pretty serious about it. And you have to watch, you have to really mind your P's and Q's. There's, you know, most of these folks have probably a full-time accountant or a or someone at a law firm in D.C. that does this for them.
Yep.
You know, if they're smart, because you don't want to get in.
Well, in a smart campaign, like you said, we're, you know, way back when saying, okay, we need to dedicate this money toward the runoff because we don't need to be, we don't want to be dead in the water. Or the one thing you could do the day after the primary election runoff happens is you immediately reach out to that top donor class to say, you can give. You can give that same, you can max out here in this election. Maybe the same thing for PACs that are giving, which those limits are higher. So
yeah, my guess would be that there's going to be some there's going to be some people that, you know, are free agents. You know, some folks that had a candidate, especially, you know, I think one thing that, that we saw, and I think we reported on it, is that people, is that Sessions sort of froze some of the money that was available. When, you know, when he jumped in, he didn't necessarily suck all of it up, but everybody had a lower quarter in the fourth quarter of this year, which is not what you would expect. And so I think that there are people, like I said earlier, that are like sort of waiting to be waiting to see what happens, see who makes the runoff, and then it's going to sort of decide who, you know, who their candidate is from that point. So there will be some money, you know, available, but some money you can't raise the, you know, in a state like this, in a race like this, you can't raise the $1 million that you need a week to do TV or whatever.
But it is interesting to have this money conversation. I hear it all the time because I, you know, when we're talking about whether it's Inside Alabama Politics or the Daily News email, we talk a lot about money. We talk a lot about ads, and people are sometimes frustrated by it. Like, why does it just matter who has the most money and everything? Well, unfortunately, you know, fair or not, that's what matters. Getting your message out there, getting on TV, radio, in the mail. I've noticed that not a lot of candidates are doing a ton of mail this time around.
Yeah.
It is very expensive, especially statewide, but it matters. And that, I'm not saying that's the way it should be, but if you can't afford to get your message up there, you're not going to be in the top tier candidates that are competing for that runoff.
Yeah, I mean, even a Tommy Tuberville who, you know, and a Jeff Sessions, guys who had, you know, enjoy very good name ID throughout the state, just by, you know, just by talking about it or whatever, they still have to have money to run ads to talk about their message for this specific race.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that put Byrne, I think, at a little bit of a disadvantage because, you know, they're down there in Mobile, you know, and he's very well known in that market, but not necessarily didn't start with, you know, a huge name ID throughout the rest of the state. He's had to basically, you know, he's had to buy that. And I think they've done a pretty good job of getting that, you know, back to where it needs to be, you know, going into what we would call week one. But I mean, I don't really have, like, you know, I was going back to that. I don't necessarily have a real good feel as to, you know, if this is Churchill Downs, you know, cause we can't bet in Alabama. So if, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what horse I would be betting on right now. When Sessions got in, I think he was the prohibitive favorite, and they have, for whatever reasons, I don't know that they were like aggressive enough in pushing that. And you know, Tuberville, I think, has not pushed, you know, he kind of started out as somebody, he's been consistent in the 30s, you know, but he has not necessarily pushed his, what I would call his inherent advantage of sort of being the celebrity candidate. And they've kind of, you know, they seem to have allowed I don't know, not necessarily the other guy to catch up, but maybe for Byrne to, you know, to be more in the mix or whatever.
I would agree. I think probably the biggest story of this campaign is the fact that Sessions has not completely run away with it. Well, I take that back. The biggest story was Sessions getting into the
game. Yes.
And I mean, this is what I wrote today, but you know, he shocked the Alabama political world. Everybody was talking about the rumor. Would he get in? Would he not? And then we finally did, just a couple of days before the qualifying deadline, it turned everything upside down. But whether it was you or me or some of the political experts, I saw people on TV in Washington, a lot of folks thought look, Jeff Sessions runs away with this thing. Mm-hmm. Look at his high favorables in Alabama, relatively low unfavorables. He can get to that 50% plus one you need to avoid the runoff. That just didn't happen. In fact, he's really not close. The closest one he had was, I think, 44 in his own poll back in December.
Right.
And ever since then, it's been a you know, that was his ceiling.
Yeah, I think the highest poll that I saw that was sort of a publicly available thing was like 41. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that felt pretty, you know, that felt low for a high watermark for a guy who's, you know, let's face it, he has represented this Senate seat between 1996 and 2017, mm-hmm. you know, and so, you know, you would think, and once he won, and I think, you know, I didn't live here in 1996 and wasn't really involved in politics, and so I think that was a pretty contentious race, right?
Yeah, right.
Ran against Bedford ran against each other, and
you know what the biggest issue was?
What's that?
Tort reform.
That's right. But he, in the end, I mean, he won fairly handily. But that was like that was his best funded opponent. I mean, ever since then, he didn't really have a race.
Especially in the Republican primary.
Right.
Because he was beloved. I mean, yeah. He was the, you know, as conservative as you can get. And, yeah, everybody loved him. What has been interesting to watch in this primary is that, okay, most voters that are going to cast ballots on March 3rd, Republicans, they have at some point in their time voted for Jeff Sessions mm-hmm. and felt great about it. Mm-hmm. And so there is some contingent of that electorate that says, nope, I'm not for Jeff. Now that's partial. A lot of that's got to be Trump mm-hmm. recusal. I'm just going to be Trump. Of course, you've also just got an anti-incumbency mood out mm-hmm. there. And even though he's not technically incumbent, he's kind of running like
functions as the incumbent. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. Even to the point where I think in his last ad or latest ad, or I don't know if it was an advertising or he just said it. But I know that I saw something the other day and I thought, you know, I don't know if I'd have said it this way. But he said, basically, I'm not a new guy. I can go up there and I know how Washington works and I can get stuff done for the state. And while that's true, and for the people that listen to this podcast, you know, most of us probably think like, you know, hey, I think that's an advantage. But I don't know that I would say that to the electorate at large.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Bradley's largely skirted the fact that, you know, in any other cycle, except maybe like 2016, he would be running as, you know, Congressman Bradley Byrne, or, you know, I've been representing you in, you know, in Mobile, and now I want to represent the rest of the state. But they haven't really done any of that because of the, you know, because like you said, the anti-incumbency mood. And I think that, and especially the anti-insider, the D.C. swamp thing. And Tuberville has done an okay job of taking what he's already an outsider role, and he's done an okay job of sort of highlighting that. But the one complaint that I hear about him from people is that there's a lack of depth on the issues when you sort of peel back that layer of the onion.
Well, you're going to want to tune in for tomorrow's. previewing Jeff Sessions' interview here, we sat down for about 20 minutes at the hotel over there in Prattville. I really appreciated him taking the time because it was a very busy day. When you get to this point in the campaign, you're stacked.
Yes.
But I thought it was interesting. He, you know, one thing I observed, he just hopped out of an SUV and into the lobby with nobody. I mean, he had some staff in the lobby waiting on him, but the last time that I had interviewed him was, you know, he came to the tailgate, mm-hmm. and you should have seen all the sirens or heard all the sirens. If they didn't have a dozen police cars, you know, somewhere or another, it was just this biggest entourage in the world. And so all I could think about was, here he comes and he's just by himself. But I'll say, you know, to his credit, he was full of energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's not a young man. He's 72? Mm-hmm. And so, but he full of energy, full of poise. He was he was very determined. He wanted to advance some talking points. He kept saying, I have not changed. You'll hear this mm-hmm. two or three times. I have not changed. I'm still the same guy. Clearly, they have settled on that as a good talking point, which I agree. I mean, remind people mm-hmm. why they loved you in the first place. But I don't know whether it's polling or maybe if you can afford it, focus groups. But I mean, that they've arrived at that. I've not changed. I'm still the same guy that kind of was for Trumpism before there was Trump.
I believe he was the first member of either body, the House or the Senate, to endorse Trump.
August of 2015.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you remember back, the whole thing's just very interesting to me because, I mean, I think that there is a solid argument that Trump doesn't make the White House without Jeff Sessions. That he doesn't make it out of the primary without Jeff Sessions.
You're right. First, and he mentions this, first in either body, and it kind of legitimized Trump to Republicans, not... The world has changed so much since then, we forget that you had this, like, sort of conservative intelligentsia, the heritages of the world, the freedom works, and of course, Congress and all this. I mean, this is the same group that nominated Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan 4 years before.
Right.
There's a hierarchy, and Trump was brash, unconventional. Those are nice words.
Right.
But he was, against all of these things that this intelligentsia was for, and Jeff Sessions just legitimized him. He gave him some kind of legitimacy in that group, I think.
Well, I totally agree with that, and with the, when they had that first rally in, was it in Pensacola?
They had one in Mobile and one in...
It was one of those things that also showed people that, like, this guy being Trump, that he plays outside of the region that he's from, that he plays outside of, sort of the New York media market. There's always that question, are Yankee candidates going to play well down south? That Romney had to answer those questions. You remember there was all that, how does being a Mormon affect, Romney or whatever? And I think that I think Trump, from coming from a different side of things, I think he faced some of those same questions going way back to 2015, and like you said, the Sessions endorsement, it legitimized him, and then that the rally thing, people were like, whoa, this might really be a thing. Like, people are really responding to Trump and Trump's message, and so it's just kind of crazy to me that what is this, 5 years later? Barely 5 years later, and Sessions is kind of having to prove his worth to the folks that now love Trump, I doubt that he says anything in the interview, but there's kind of this thing in the back of his mind. He's like, really? I mean, come on, I gave you the guy,
Well, one he does say, because he touches on that, of course, the history there, but he clearly says that one of the reasons he wants to go back is to push the Republican Party to fully embrace sort of the policy side and maybe the, for lack of a better word, the cultural side of this. One interesting thing about Sessions, and we need to play this, one interesting thing about Sessions that has been there really all along, or as long as I've been knowing him and paying attention, so let's say 10 years. He has very much been wanting to push the Republican Party to sort of this cultural populism that, whereas, the blue bloods of the past, the Rockefellers, really probably look down their nose at the redneck Alabamians and the workers. But that is who makes up the party now. Mm-hmm. Sessions has always been pushing for that. He talks about it in here saying, look, these are the voters. This is how Trump picked him up. He spoke a different language to these folks. And instead of looking down your nose, you need to be seeing them as the base of the party, who we're fighting for. This is why we're fighting China. So when he talks about this, I was there. He was a true believer on those kind of things.
Right.
And what I'm trying to get at is why you're running for Senate. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to it when he was talking about that. I think he sees himself as the mantle bearer for what Trump sort of caught in a lightning in a bottle in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I do think, I don't know that, back to sort of a campaign, milieu here. I don't know that his ads have been as good. I don't know that anybody's ads have been as good as they could be. But the one where at the end where he puts on the hat is probably the best ad that I've seen of the cycle, just because I was sitting there and I was watching and I was like, if he puts on the hat, that's a difference between like an A+ and like a solid B, because he, he's got a set of talking points, but, and what he talks about is he was the first one to to endorse Trump and da 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 da. And he goes through it, and at the end, he pulls out a MAGA hat and he puts it on. And I mean, that's a good way to sort of put an exclamation point on what we're talking about. The interesting thing for this week is does Trump say anything? Either way, and I don't know that anybody has a clue if he will, and if he will, what he does say. That's the other $1 million question.
I agree. Well, enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, appreciate for sure.
It. And we'll do it again. But without further ado, here's our interview with Jeff Sessions coming in the weeds. Hello, sir. Thanks for coming in the weeds today. Last time we spoke, or at least on the record, you were Attorney General of the United States.
Todd, it's been an exciting time to be able to participate in a lot of the great issues of our time.
Well, a lot has happened since then. Let me just ask you about the Senate race. Why are you running? Why, after all that's happened over the last several years, why run again for this seat in the Senate?
We have an opportunity right now that we cannot miss. When President Trump is reelected, and I think he will be, he will have an opportunity for a year or two before he becomes a lame duck to get some things done. We have the momentum. I think he can have a nice victory. Maybe we can even gain in the House and take the House back. Who knows? But if we don't get some things done to fix problems facing this country quickly, we won't get them done. I believe there's an opportunity to end the lawlessness at the border and bring the whole system under control, create a lawful system of immigration that serves the national interest. That's what I've worked on for over 10 years. I'm the leading expert out of House and Senate on that, the leading voice on that subject. Tommy Tuberville does not get it. Actually, he's wrong about it. He says people just want jobs. They come across the border. We want them to have jobs and become citizens. This is not the philosophy that Alabama needs to send to Washington. We need to, if you don't have a passionate voice and a deep understanding of these issues, the pressure is always to go soft and liberal. It just is. And so I think he was in error about that very deeply. And it would be a mistake for Alabama not to send a clear, strong, able voice on this issue. Secondly, he's also said some very bad things about trade. He says he is against tariffs. Well, that's the dividing line between Donald Trump and the globalist. Donald Trump says you've got to use your tools, tariffs, to bring these people to the table. That's what he did with Mexico and Canada. That's what he's had his initial success with China. If you don't have the guts and the will to do that, you'll never bring China to the table. And he needs our support. He needs desperately every Republican to support him in that effort. And if we do, we'll have a historic gain with China. And it will be so great for American manufacturing. And we can protect jobs for working Americans. So those are things that I feel real deeply about. I've given years of my life to. I have not changed one bit. I have not changed in my relationship and my support for Donald Trump. I have not changed in my philosophy. So I think that I am able to be more effective than any other candidate, mainly because I care about it so deeply, and secondly, I know the issues, than other candidates at this point in time.
Interesting to go ahead and set some contrast with Tuberville there, because my next question was, there's a lot of people that say in this environment that the three of you, you, Coach Tuberville, Congressman Byrne, in this Senate environment might not vote differently, right? It's pretty clear cut. Maybe in the old days, maybe there would be some variations on things, but generally a lot of people say y'all would vote the same. Is that not the case? Or if so, I mean, what's the real difference?
Let me say it this way. In a campaign like this one in Alabama, where the voters are very strongly in favor of the Trump agenda, you can expect all of them to say they're going to vote the same way. What's important is who is authentic about it, who has a record, who has been effective in actually stopping the amnesty bill that would not have brought law enforcement to immigration. Who led the fight? Out of 535 members of Congress, I was the number one fighter, not only on immigration, but against this trade bill, this trans-Pacific trade agenda that would create a almost European Union where 12 countries would come together and the Sultan of Brunei would have the same vote as the President of the United States. I led the fight against that, and Donald Trump came along, and he hammered it, and it was dead. But until then, the first vote was all but five Republicans supported that thing. That was a disaster. Senator Shelby, Cruz, Rand Paul.
It was Cruz's bill at first.
Well, he changed and voted against it. But really, I think I helped lead him to that. Mm-hmm. And I went down into the basement and I read the deal. I exposed what it was all about. So I guess what I would say to you, when I tell the people of Alabama, I haven't changed. I remain vigorous and strong on these issues. And I've proven that I am authentic about it and can actually win battles. Then I think that is much better than somebody who also is sending very mixed messages. I mean, when he says he's 100% free trader, that's not Donald Trump's message. Donald Trump is a fair trader. This is a huge thing. So he says, I'm 100% free trader. I don't like tariffs. I don't agree, he said, with President Trump's handling of the China matter. Well, we would never have had a victory if Trump hadn't been strong and firm on that and brought them to the table. So I'm really worried about it. I do not sense that Tommy Tuberville is going to be a passionate advocate for the great values of Alabamians.
You mentioned your relationship with President Trump. That has been the point of attack from your opponents. They have zeroed in and said, you know, pointed to, well, I mean, his obvious displeasure with you. Fair or not, it is, at least it looks that way on Twitter, hasn't gotten over the recusal. And you're not the only one who's been on the receiving end of his displeasure, obviously, but it matters because he's the President of the United States and the most important issue in this race. So let's say you go back to the Senate. Let's say you win. Can that relationship be repaired? What's the future there?
Well, I think I have my head and heart right about this. I've given a lot of thought. I want President Trump to be successful. I support his agenda. That's why I was the first senator in the Congress to endorse him. And so I want him to be successful. I'm going to be a great ally for him in the Senate because I've been fighting for these issues before he announced the presidency. And so, yes, I think I can work with him. And I would remind everyone, of course, that he said not long ago that he would support whoever the people of Alabama chose. And Vice President Pence said the same thing. So did Don Trump Jr. said, whoever the people of Alabama support is okay with us. So that's what I think is important. I'm asking the people of Alabama, I want them to know I haven't changed. I still remain and believe I will continue to be his number one supporter in the Senate because I understand what he ran on. I went to rallies with him in Washington State, in Arizona, in Phoenix, where he set out his immigration policy, Pennsylvania multiple times in Florida. I saw those crowds. I heard what he was saying to them. I understand his message. I know why he was able to draw in new voters to the party, that a Republican Party that gets narrow, not reaching out to new voters is not going to win. It's going to be a disaster, and the socialists could win. We need to see what President Trump is saying, why those crowds came out and still do with such enthusiasm. We need, as a party, to make clear that we're not holding our nose and wrinkling our nose up at President Trump, but we understand what he's saying. We enthusiastically support him. Many Republicans don't quite get that. And they need to be pushed, and they need to be reminded that these are great American people who work every day, probably make below median income, struggling to get by. And they need to know that this Republican Party cares about them, understands their problems, and have got policies that will help them do better. And they've done better under President Trump. We should celebrate that and drive that message, which I think is not being effectively done.
Why do you think he hasn't gotten over the recusal?
Well, it was a big thing, and it caused great disruption for him. And it seemed to go on far longer than any of us would have thought possible. They turned every rock over three times,
Mueller.
It seems. Mueller did. He brought in a group of lawyers that clearly appeared to be a biased, or at least clear to be strong Democrats and Hillary Clinton supporters. And that caused disturbance. But I recused fundamentally because I was such a part of the campaign.
Right.
I mean, I was with him. I was on the campaign. I had a title. I was a national security chair. And I nominated him at the Republican convention. He called me on 9 o'clock that day and said, I want you to nominate me 5 o'clock tonight. And those are the kind of the things that put me in a position. And they were investigating me, make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
So you can't supervise your own investigation. That's just not possible. But I was confident that there was absolutely no collusion. I never doubted that he would be cleared, and he has been cleared.
You mentioned the convention. I'm just have an image in my head of Rick pumping up the crowd on the convention floor.
It did
like
happen.
A neon hat or something. You mentioned pushing the party.
Yeah.
You've done that in the past. And people play different roles in the Senate. You were never a potted plant. You were an instigator, a messenger for conservative causes. Sometimes that, leadership didn't appreciate being pushed that much on immigration, on trade, on budgets. So looking to going back to the Senate, is that the same kind of role you want to play? Do you want to transition into other sort of parochial interests? What's the role you want to play?
There are two key aspects of a United States senator. One we hadn't mentioned, and that is to protect the interest of the state of Alabama and the people of Alabama. That is a huge job. Well, look, nobody else in this Senate spent 20 years going to 67 counties every year, working with our Austell shipyards in Mobile with 4,000 people. I was there when we brought it online. It came out of my subcommittee, Sea Power. And we've nurtured that, and it's got some uncertainty now. Mm-hmm. There's some danger there. Fort Rucker, we've fended off every attempt to erode Fort Rucker, and we've actually increased it. Then you got Maxwell. Air Force Base and the Gunner Annex and that great computer center that we've helped defend and expand and protect the base here and look forward to the F-35 coming here. Then Anniston Army Depot, which is a key economic driver in the Anniston region, and that's going to be under challenge. And then even more so is the incredible high-tech defense contracts and NASA contracts in Huntsville. That's one of the most remarkable things at Redstone Arsenal. So you've got not only is the military there, you've got Boeing, Lockheed, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman with thousands of employees. They're continuing to, and those employees are making missiles, satellite data, new supersonic, hypersonic weapon system that's got to be developed there. Lockheed's building a plant in a missile plant in Courtland in North Alabama. They've already got one in Troy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been at the beginning of all of that. And
sounds like you want back on armed services.
Well, I do. And Chairman Jim Inhofe of the Armed Services Committee is one of my best friends, and he has told me he wants me on the committee and he'd like for me to chair a subcommittee. And Senator Shelby and I have been good partners on this. And he is very generously helping me in this race, because we've got an opportunity to keep the economic development that going. And the other candidates, well, I guess Congressman Byrne knows about Mobile and Austell, but he's not represented these other bases in the state like I have. And Tommy Tuberville has no experience in this at all. So I do think that I can hit the ground running, both to protect Alabama and our interest, and to advance the agenda that Alabamians believe in, our values nationwide.
Well, speaking of committees, has the majority leader indicated anything about seniority? That was a question really when you got in the race to begin with. I'm not clear. Did he say that you could have it back, some of it or all of it?
No, I've explained this clearly. You don't get to come in and jump over people who are committee chairmen now and that kind of thing. But I would be the number one. I would be the senior person in my class. Okay. I would get the first pick of my committees, obviously for Alabama's interest and my own experience. I was ten years in the Army Reserve. I'm the only person veteran in the race except Judge Moore, who certainly was a West Point graduate. But I think that that would be a good fit for me, both for Alabama's interest and my own. But there'll be other committees too that I would be able to participate in.
You were ranking member on budget for a while. What are we going to do about that? I don't. It's one of these issues that I never quite figure out. Like, nobody really talks about it anymore. But it's pretty. What is it? $22 trillion now. Is that something you would want to get involved in, budget stuff?
Yeah, so we're going to have to. It's a thankless task. I led the fight when we were in the minority, and I was the ranking Republican, the senior Republican on the budget committee, where we talked about where the Democrats would not even produce a budget because it showed how big their deficits were, and they didn't want to do it. And they went 2 or 3 years. And I started making speeches, if you remember, 400 days without a budget, 569 days without a budget, 700 days without a budget. It became a big issue in the campaign. Republicans took back the Senate and with a big victory, and that was a big issue. Then one of my colleagues, who was senior to me, took the chairmanship of the budget committee, and Republicans could be rightly criticized for not wanting to talk about it anymore when they had the majority. Mm-hmm. So I think the Republicans are going to need to be pushed to begin to seriously consider this. Let me just say this fundamentally. We spend $4.7 trillion. A trillion of that is borrowed. And that's been going on for a long time. You can't operate when you borrow 20% or more of what it takes to run your government. At some point, we will have a reaction, an adverse economic reaction. It was predicted to occur sooner. I warned that it could occur sooner. It hasn't occurred yet. Inflation hadn't taken off. The currency hadn't, interest rates hadn't gone up. So now people think it's just not going to happen. That's not accurate. We will face a reckoning someday.
It's just awkward because everybody's kind of enjoying these, appropriations, deals that happen. So
and we got things we promise, we want to do. I really do think we need a national infrastructure bill. The president will bring that up. I think we've got to do that. But there are ways to cut spending. It is not true that you can't cut spending. We can do it with, there'll always be some pain, but I don't think it'll be any kind of devastating results of managing our money better, ending wastefulness and fraud.
Last question. Everybody's following the race. At this point, it'll be 1 week to go. What has to happen? Two questions, actually. What has to happen in the next week to make this your campaign successful? And then looking forward, assuming there's a runoff, what has to happen in the runoff to make you ultimately the nominee?
I think what I want the people of Alabama to know is I have not changed. I remain committed to President Trump's agenda and to his success, because it's my agenda, it's Alabama's agenda. I'm not going to stop fighting for that. I'm not going to be a potted plant. I'm not going to go up there and wimp out. I think number two competitor in Coach Tuberville, that he is not firm and clear on the top two issues, I think, that will be decisive in the next year. Trade, standing up to China, protecting our manufacturing, immigration, ending lawlessness, creating a system, as President Trump wants to do, that serves the national interest. So those are huge issues, and we'll need to talk about that all week.
Is it fun being back on the trail?
It's been fun, actually. It's exciting. You meet good people, a lot of old friends, a lot of new friends. So it's been rewarding. But we're in a race, understanding. The people of Alabama are going to make a decision that will be very important about what kind of leader they want to send to Washington. They know where I stand. They know that I've advocated for our values, and I want to remind them of that. But it's not about the past. It's about the future. Who can protect our interests the best right now? Who can advance Alabama's interests when we have this window of opportunity with President Trump to get things done? Who can help him the most? I believe I'm the best person for both those.
Thanks for taking the time.